Taylor Anderson is a gunmaker and forensic ballistic archaeologist who has been a technical and dialogue consultant for movies and documentaries. In his acclaimed Destroyer Men series of novels, A Parallel Universe adds an extraordinary layer to the drama of World War II. Welcome, Taylor.
Well, thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure to be speaking with you. Can you tell us how you got started with this series? What was the inspiration?
Well, it's actually kind of a long story. I've always enjoyed writing, and I was actually working on a movie about the Alamo, and we were in a conversation with several people about, you know, famous last stands, if you will. You know, I guess that was kind of a natural thing, being on a movie about the Alamo. And the last stand of the Asiatic fleet came up as a metaphor or as a similar situation, excuse me. And that's when the nucleus got planted in my mind, the egg, if you will, and of course I've been involved in historical pursuits all my life, and I guess the science fiction fantasy angle came in as just a fresh way to use history, and that's kind of where it started.
We're now up to book 5, titled Rising Tides. Can you just fill us in for folks who aren't familiar with the series? Who were the main characters? We're talking about the crew of a World War II destroyer, right?
Yes, sir. Primarily, there are other characters as well from several different species that have evolved on an alternate Earth that is essentially the same as the one we live on, but it has undergone a parallel evolution that basically the divergence point was the extinction event 65 million years ago. And so the evolution has progressed in an entirely different fashion as the one that happened here. The main characters, if you will, the destroyer men, are a group of men and women that wound up on an old four-stacker destroyer, which was a World War I era destroyer made in 1919. And many of these ships were built in 30 days or less. And they're very antiquated, very primitive in many ways. And unfortunately, that was about all that the United States forces had to face the Japanese with in the Philippines, and then ultimately in what they referred to then as the Dutch East Indies at the outbreak of the war. And it was an Alamo-like situation. They were, you know, totally outclassed in material and numbers and quality, and the culture of the people in the Asiatic fleet was different from a lot of others in the Navy and other fleets as well. They lived on what they called the China Station or in the Philippines, and they lived a different life than many in other parts of the Navy. A lot of the crews considered, you know, they'd been out there so long, they considered the Philippines to be their homes. A lot of them intended to retire there. They had Filipino wives and sweethearts, and it was just a different situation than most of the Navy. And with the antiquated equipment they had, they were totally ill-prepared for the Japanese attack. And when they had to leave the Philippines, they were kind of traumatized by that event because a lot of them had to leave their families there, or what they considered to be their family, and what many considered to be their home. And so there were a number of kind of eccentric characters in the story that I tried to use to capture that sense. And it was kind of an insular, you know, worldly as they were kind of insular as well, because their world was that ship, and then, and of course, the extended world was one that was considerably different from society here at the time. And so they provided an interesting mix of characters.
Did you have a personal connection to the society or the culture of the Asiatic fleet?
No, sir. I really didn't. Well, other than having met some people that were in the Asiatic fleet over the years. I had a store when I was building custom guns, and I had people from all walks of life come in there, and a lot of military people, and we'd sit and talk. And then one day we were actually talking about the old four stacker destroyers, a submariner friend of mine and I, and an old gentleman came in and he said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, old four stacker destroyers in the Asiatic fleet." And he said, "Oh, I was on one." And it was just, you know, kind of an accidental meeting, and we asked him to sit down and tell us about it.
Had you been a writer before that?
No, sir. Not professionally. As a student, I wrote a lot of papers. I always enjoyed writing, and I had several novels, I guess you would say, that I'd been tinkering with over the years, but I never had time to devote my full attention to it. And in fact, it was the movie business that gave me that opportunity, because I'd been involved in quite a few movies over the years, and from technical aspects and training the artillery crews and participating on the artillery crews for, you know, from a safety perspective and a technical perspective. And when I went down to work on the Alamo, I knew I was going to be down there a long time, and I was about ready for a change. So I sold my store. And then I spent 7.5 months on the Alamo set, and that's kind of when I started writing the story. Began with Into the Storm, and it just kind of took off from there.
The captain is Lieutenant Commander Matthew Patrick Reddy, and when you say Into the Storm, the ship ends up in a squall and then emerges somewhere else. Where is that?
Well, it's on the in the alternate universe. The storm has a double entendre, I guess, if you will, because the storm that takes them from the storm of the dreadful situation after the Battle of the Java Sea, when the Asiatic fleet virtually ceased to exist, and pretty much what few ships remained were trying to escape to Australia or Ceylon. And so they were in a storm, if you will. And then they entered this while they were being pursued by historically multiple Japanese task forces. They entered this squall, which they had actually been deliberately searching for squalls to evade the enemy. And in my story, they entered one that was different from the others.
Right.
And found themselves in an alternate universe that, having passed through that storm, they entered another storm, if you will, of a war between two other sentient species that weren't human.
Mm-hmm. This is a fascinating series. As I said, we're up to book 5, Rising Tides. Do you know where it goes from here?
Yes, sir. Book number 6 is in the can, if you will,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to be released in October, and I'm currently working on book number 7.
Wow. Any prospects for television or film adaptation? It sounds like a natural for Hollywood.
Well, I don't really know. I'm having been in the movie industry I have a pretty good idea how things like that work on set. I don't know much about what happens behind the scenes, to be honest with you. Yeah, there has been some interest, but nothing particularly serious as of yet.
Tantor has published the audiobook editions of all five of your Destroyer Men books, and they're all narrated by William Dufresne. Have you heard any of them?
Yes, I have. I've listened to them. They're actually a great tool for me. When I travel, I stick one in, and it kind of helps bring me back up to speed on some things that I may have forgotten in previous books. And it's very entertaining to listen to it from that perspective. I think that Mr. Dufresne does an outstanding job. His skill with different voices is amazing. I can do my own voice, and sometimes when I have a cold, I sound sort of like Neville Brand, but other than that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
People have actually accused me of tormenting him with how many different voices I use in the story, you know, like I'm trying to see if I can stump him. And so far, I certainly haven't done that on purpose, but so far I sure haven't. He's done a great job, and I'm real impressed with him.
Glad to hear that. We're looking forward to book 6. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, Taylor Anderson, author of the Destroyer Men series.
Well, thank you, sir.